This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. World War I started in 1914, but it wasn't until April 6, 1917 that the U.S. got involved. The war's toll was horrific. More than 17 million military personnel and civilians died, and another 20 million were wounded. American deaths totaled more than 116,000. WVXU's Howard Wilkinson is doing a series of reports to commemorate the 100th anniversary of America's entry into the war. And this afternoon, Howard, local historian and Ohio World War I Centennial Commission member Paul LaRue, and Carl Westmoreland, senior historian at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, join us to discuss African Americans who served during World War I. African Americans made up 13% of the wartime military, almost 400,000 men, including many from Greater Cincinnati. Later in the show, we will hear Howard's interview with a Cincinnati veteran who was held prisoner by the Germans during World War II. You can join the conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Carl, Paul, and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Paul, how well do people know the story of the African-American soldiers who served during World War II? Is this just pretty much a story you don't hear much about, people don't really know much about?
I spent 30 years in a high school history classroom, and I can tell you both as a teacher and with my students that these are probably one group of men who we know less about than almost any other group of veterans.
Does that include Civil War, African-Americans who served in the Civil War, in World War II even?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that nearly twice as many African-Americans served in World War I as in the Civil War. And yet only to date, there have only been two African-American World War I recipients of the Congressional Medal of Honor, whereas by 1865, there were nearly two dozen African-American Civil War veterans, soldiers and sailors, who had received the commendation.
Yeah. Carl, why are their stories so unknown, these African-American soldiers who served during World War I? Why don't we know more about them?
You know, after the Civil War, and I think that disparity and the percentage of Congressional Medal Award winners lays out what happened right after the Civil War. We retrenched. We resegregated. We did away with enslavement formally. But then we took another tact, and that was, we'll just ignore your presence. We'll ignore your contribution. We need you for one thing, cheap labor. And there was a psychological tool that was quite effective, but we'll never recognize it. We won't include it in the historical record.
And very few of these African-American soldiers in World War I were in combat roles, correct?
Yeah, of the 380,000 that served, probably somewhere between 10 and 12% were actually in combat. About 85% were, as Carl mentioned, because of the institutional racism and the segregation of the day, were basically served in labor units. And even though their contributions were significant, they weren't given the opportunity to serve in combat units.
So exactly what kind of roles are we talking? What kind of jobs were they doing?
A lot of the if you were in the service, in those service things, you did anything from recover bodies, rebury bodies, dig trenches. A term you see a lot is the term stevedore, where there was a lot of loading of ships and equipment. And so if we tell the story of these men and their contributions, we need to tell the whole story. And that's something that I think Carl and I talk a lot about, is this kind of complete inclusion of this African-American experience.
And yeah. Many of those men did those jobs under enemy fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would be under fire quite often, particularly once they got to the war theater where the battles mm-hmm. were going on. So when the front of those boats opened, they went in right behind the infantry, and they're taking 150 pounds, and that's what they're dealing with.
Yeah, and World War I was a particularly brutal war. I mean, it was the first time we'd ever had a lot of the modern technology that we see in war today. It was the first time that things like tanks popped up and other types of military equipment. This was trench warfare as well. So this was just a really, really harsh war.
And the men digging the trenches did it under fire.
And one of the things specifically is the in World War One they had literally what they called the pioneer infantry, and these men were trained infantrymen who worked as combat construction. And as Carl mentioned, you know, often and there were both black and white regiments of pioneer infantry, but these men were, you know, as Carl said, they would perform their duties under fire, and sometimes they would literally need to obviously pick up and serve as an infantryman.
Do we know, Paul, how many soldiers, African-American soldiers from Cincinnati served in World War I? Do we know the numbers?
I don't know a specific number from Cincinnati. It's kind of interesting. We know from Ohio, I mean, I'm talking a total number of Ohioans that served in World War I, the number's 263,000. But in terms of an actual number of African-Americans, I've not seen that number. And we also know that nearly 7,000 Ohioans lost their life in World War I. And a number of those were African-Americans from Cincinnati.
Yeah, they weren't recorded as by race in most of the military service records.
Yeah, we have actually better records. It's interesting. We have better records from the Civil War in many ways than we do in World War I. Another interesting piece of information is about 80% of the military records from World War I were destroyed in a fire in St. Louis in 1971. Yeah. So again, it's truly easier to do Civil War research than World War I research.
One of the fascinating things in the story that I did that's on WVXU.org is about Beech Grove Cemetery in Cincinnati in Springfield Township. Tell me the story of how, Paul, you and your students from Washington Courthouse became involved at the invitation of Carl.
Well, I'll defer to Carl first, and then I'll come back, because Carl's the one that invited us.
He did, yes.
Well, the Beech Grove Cemetery was established by people who had been born in slavery, and they came to Lachlan initially, drawn by Longworth, who built factories in Lachlan, and Lachlan was the second largest city in the county at that time. Lachlan looks like a postage stamp now. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, the Miami Erie Canal went through what was I-75. And so black people came to Lachlan to get work, and also came to Lachlan before the end of the Civil War, before the Civil War, in fact, because it was far enough away from the river that they felt relatively safe. As they began to die, at first they were buried on Wayne Avenue at Lindy, and that's where my mother's grandfather's buried, but it's where the Valley Homes was. And then they bought, through the leadership of a gentleman whose last name was Kamak, originally from Louisiana, they went up on Fleming Road, where the road ran out in the township, out just feet away from Wyoming. And they bought this site and began to bury people there. And they set up an association to do the burials. What they didn't do, because they didn't have the business acumen, they did nothing about funding an ongoing maintenance process. There was another unique thing in that when I was a little boy, the families every year on Decoration Day would go up and they would clean and take care of the burial sites. And that was pretty much done all over the country in black and in poor white cemeteries. As time has moved on, you know, I say we've come to the point where men get their fingernails done and they don't have time to, nor interest in going and doing that kind of work. So Beech Grove, where many people in my family are buried, has fallen into disrepair. And I met Mr. LaRue at the Union Baptist Cemetery dedication, Civil War dedication, several years ago. And I knew he had this army of young students. And I called him and went up and talked to the students. And they loaded up and they've worked with us not once, not twice, but for years.
What did they do, Paul?
Well, we had an opportunity when Carl extended us the, you know, this option to come down and do some work. We had started in our own community getting headstones for veterans with unmarked graves, you know, because we all have a basic belief that every veteran should have a marked grave. In fact, my students were fascinated they assumed every veteran did have a headstone. Mm-hmm. And so we started, as Carl mentioned, we started doing this in our own community. And Carl had come up and visited and had shared, you know, stories with my students and then invited us to come down. And we it was a privilege and an honor to install headstones for five African-American World War I veterans who did not have headstones, including one who was killed in action, who was from, as Carl mentions, from Lackland, or his mother was living in Lackland.
Who was the veteran who was killed in action?
Ludlow Luther.
Okay.
Was in, again, it's an interesting story. He was in one of the 317th Engineers, so he was in a service regiment, but he was detached as a Wagner and was put in the 369th, which is the famous Harlem Hellfighters, and was killed in action July 15th, 1918.
The Harlem Hellfighters. Tell me about that group.
Well, the when you talk about the combat, because there were a number of African Americans soldiers who served in combat, a lot of them were brigaded with the French. The 369, 370, 371, and 372 were all four regiments that were under French command. The French were very comfortable with African Americans because they had used colonial troops, and there were several hundred thousand soldiers from Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and Senegal.
And they said, "We welcome the help too." Right?
They were treated, you know, they were treated well, and the French were by that time had lost nearly a million men. You know, as you mentioned, the war starts in 1914. The United States doesn't enter until 1917. The French were down, so General Pershing, because of the manpower needs of the French and because they were very comfortable with colonial troops, they were very comfortable with the African Americans. So the Harlem Hellfighters, which was based around the National Guard unit, it's the 15th New York, was the first of the African American World War I combat regiments. They saw the most combat. But also, I should mention Ohio. A number of Ohioans were in the 372nd, which was actually based around the 9th. Ohio National Guard unit. It was an African-American National Guard unit. And another local soldier by the name of William Chenault was killed in combat as part of the 372nd.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining me this afternoon, WVXU's Howard Wilkinson, local historian and Ohio World War I Centennial Commission member Paul LaRue, and Carl Westmoreland, senior historian at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And they're joining us to discuss African Americans who served during World War I. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And as you're working on this project, Carl and Paul, with these students, how did the students react? What were their thoughts on this?
Their mouths were open, but most importantly, their hearts and their intellect had been prepared, frankly, by Mr. LaRue to listen to people who don't look like them and to listen carefully. And then it was just beautiful to see how they responded. And what I mean by that is you'd give them a task to do, and they would just go not just do the task. But then, well, I found this out about this man. Let me look up who he really was. And so they began to teach us. It was a correspondence back and forth. And so, as I said to them more than once, some of those young people are going to be the mayor of Washington Courthouse. Somebody's going to be a United States senator. And they're going to be informed about the community of which they're part, not just the white part. But and so it's a thing, for example, they've gone home and talked to their parents, their neighbors. And when I go to Washington Courthouse, I get to meet with the mayor. I get to meet with the old salts, black and white. Yeah. I get to meet with the senior citizens group. The salts don't intermingle with the senior citizens group because I think they got little bottles hidden. But it's beautiful.
Well, it was great when we went. Carl would always meet with the students. And it was, you know, Carl described earlier decorating grace. It was like family. And so my students really felt like, not only were they honoring veterans, but they were honoring family. Maybe not their grandfathers and great-grandfathers, but, you know, they left that day. And I spent a lot of time in the classroom, and I can tell you, my students left that day one, feeling very proud of the contribution they made, but two, with a real understanding of you know, this community. And when I say community, I mean it in a broad sense. And that's what Carl did a great job of kind of instilling in my students, a sense of community.
How did you go about locating the grave sites in Beech Grove?
We were fortunate that the WPA did a series of maps in the late 1930s and early 40s, and they actually on it marked where graves were. And my students, who were actually better at math than I am, by identifying two points and doing a right angle, actually could calculate where the actual graves were. And I have to say, I had a young lady in my class, who I think she's an engineer now, and they took great pride in planning it out ahead of time. And then we would go down and we would measure it out. And the students, again, and I think Carl alluded to it, the students did the work. They really, and they took a huge sense of pride in it.
For example, one young lady, and I didn't know this until later, I was telling them about my great-grandfather being buried there and being born enslaved in Estill County, Kentucky, and coming here, and even though he couldn't read and write, he worked at Philip Carey, and he was so light-skinned, he drove a switch engine. So he's one of the few black men that didn't end up with lung cancer. But the important thing was he sent my great-aunt, who graduated from Wyoming High School at 15 years of age, to Howard University. He could not read or write. And then he sent my mother to Wilberforce. Well, my great-aunt was a public health nurse for 49 years for the city of Cincinnati. This young white woman in Washington Courthouse said, if that black woman can do that.
Yeah.
Okay? And yeah. She believed me, you know. Yeah. I point to my great-grandfather's grave and then point to Aunt Fanny's grave, and she said, well, now she's an RN.
I would always ask I'd always ask the students to do a reflective writing, and that was one of the things that came up when I said, what did you remember about the day?
They were inspired.
Absolutely.
Jeannie joins us now. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I want to thank Mr. Carl Westmoreland for years of tracking African-American history in this city. And I'm extremely intrigued with, is it Dr. or Mr. LaRue? Thank you so much. I've been looking for a World War I historian. I have two uncles, brothers, who did join the Signal Corps and survived World War I on the Western Front. I'm currently researching one of them who survived into the 1980s for a small museum. And I guess my question would be, well, I do understand that Ohio had one of the largest numbers of soldiers in World War I. I believe you did say that. And I also had understood that. How would a person contact or get more information about World War I and its effect on soldiers post-World War I, retrieving, coming home, and surviving?
Okay, so what resources are out there? How do you research this?
The best place to start is the Ohio rosters. There's 18 volumes, and it's Ohio soldiers, sailors, and Marines that served in World War I. And it's a great starting point. And as I mentioned, one of the challenges is a lot of the military records were destroyed. But start with that volume. Dan Riegel, who actually is a member of the Cincinnati Civil War Roundtable in genealogy, has been extremely helpful with these kinds of records and things that are out there. Because World War I, you would think, would be easier to research, but it's fairly challenging to do.
Dean can find anyone.
Carl, does the Freedom Center have resources that could be of help in researching World War I?
What we do is act as an intermediary, and we've been involved in projects like this all over the country, everywhere from Massachusetts to a Black Civil War burial site in South Carolina. But we then always go find a Paul LaRue to help empower the people who are in those communities and who also understand the records and the whole bit. And part of what we do is make them understand as a community, the national and the international importance of each individual life, and that it's worth the effort. We've worked in a cemetery in Havre de Grace, Maryland, that an asbestos disposal company in New York City wanted to dump asbestos on. And we got conservative legislators to work with this all-black congregation to send the guys from New York packing, but based on the history of the lives of the people who were buried there.
Paul, what did you have to go through to get the proper headstones for these soldiers?
Well, the Department of Veterans Affairs has provided headstones for veterans for over 100 years, and so it's a matter of doing the paperwork. And my students, again, filled out the paperwork. You have to be able to prove you know where the soldier is buried and that you can prove their service. And so, again, that was part of the learning process. We would, because it would take several months to get those. So this was kind of, we knew we were going to do this. We ordered the students filled out the paperwork. We got the headstones, and then we were able to get down to Beech Grove. And I will say, as a person who was in the classroom, again, for many years, this was probably one of the most meaningful experiences, you know, not only for my students, but for myself to honor these, you know, to honor any veteran, but certainly this group of forgotten veterans.
Yeah, and you've actually created a series of lesson plans, right, that the teachers can use to teach their students more about this.
Yes, we're fortunate. The Ohio World War I Centennial Committee we have two lesson plans currently available so that a teacher, and it's a day lesson plan, so hopefully any teacher who wants more information can get that, because teachers are incredibly busy, and we want to provide resources to be able to show some diversity and to show, you know, tell some of these stories that are too often forgotten.
And we have links to Paul's World War I study guides available at WVXU.org as well. Let's talk to Grayson in Cincinnati. Hi, Grayson.
Hi. I just want to thank both these gentlemen for bringing these stories to light. I am an adult. I'm 46. And, you know, there is not enough African American history taught in our schools. I mean, I did not learn about the contribution of African Americans to our society until I was an adult, and I had to go seek it out for myself. And I really think that it would be a great benefit to our society if it were taught more in our primary and in our secondary schools. I hope that it's changing, but it wasn't there when I was in school, and I think that it's just a shame, because African Americans have been contributing to our society since our country has been born.
Yeah.
And
let's ask Paul something here.
It's a shame.
Paul, is this changing? I want to ask Paul a question here, because you're making me think about this. Is this changing?
I think so, because, I mean, this is American history, and it's American history about, you know, a group of men and women who we don't hear enough about. So, I mean, World War I is a great example. The African-American contribution, that's part of American history. And hopefully, in working with Carl and the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center and other groups, World War I Centennial, we can get out the word about this.
And Grayson, thank you so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Is there yet more history to be uncovered about these men who served during World War I?
Absolutely. I hope with the World War I Centennial provides an opportunity for communities, you know, as Carl has done so well with Beech Grove, to investigate everybody's history. I mean, we have World War I history in Washington Courthouse. You know, every community has these rich stories, and it's just a matter of doing it. And I appreciate Howard helping kind of bring out that story.
Yeah. And Howard, okay, this is the first in your series. What's coming? How many more pieces in this?
Well, not quite sure yet. I'm going to keep doing them until I run out of them, Mark. I'll tell you, and I may not run out of them for a long time, but there are a number of very interesting stories, mostly having to do with Cincinnati and its German heritage during World War I.
You can read Howard's story, as well as follow the series at WVXU.org. Thank you both for joining us today, Carl and Paul. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Local historian and Ohio World War I Centennial Commission member Paul LaRue and Carl Westmoreland, senior historian at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Coming up, we're going to hear Howard's interview with a Cincinnati veteran about his service during World War II. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.